From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for December 17th, 2021, and it's a week till Christmas. The Packers are in Baltimore this Sunday, and your Milwaukee Bucks have a couple of home games this week, Cleveland on Saturday and Houston on Wednesday. You ever walk around an art gallery and think, this would be so much better if I was naked? Well, if the answer is yes, then the Palais de Tokyo, I can't speak French, the Palais de Tokyo in Paris has got you covered, so to speak. This contemporary art gallery allows guests to strip off for clothing-free events. I may not know art, but I know what I like. Check this out. Euthanasia and assisted suicide are legal in Germany, but only if you've been vaccinated. Yeah, we thought Germans had no sense of humor. A Colorado sheriff's office said I didn't mean to be insensitive after it tweeted a photo of Santa getting a concealed carry permit. So kids, be careful what you ask for because Santa's packing. Here's a bizarre story from Canada. Bucks, not the world champion Milwaukee Bucks, but the four-legged kind, are picking on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It's mating season, and the young Bucks think the inflatable Christmas decorations, mainly Rudolph and his no-so-bright, are in competition for the prettiest females. So they headbutt, stomp, gore, and bite the inflatables. Now, I'll bet Rudolph wishes they would just go back to laughing and calling him names. And finally, our goofy headline of the week comes from the People's Daily. In need of a baby boom, China clamps down on vasectomies. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Kind of in a rare mood there, Max. It says you were all over the place there. Well, folks, stocks sold off this week, a reversal of the nice gains that we saw the week before. NASDAQ down 460 points, pretty good drop, 2.9%. Closed today at 15,170, still up 18.5% for the year. The broader markets, S&P stock composite 500, shed 91 points, losing 1.9%, closed today at 46.21. Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 604 points this week, shedding 1.7%. Closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 35,367. Yield on the 10-year keeps going down, closed today at 1.4%. You know, Kyle, if you'd looked at trading this week, you'd have a hard time understanding the direction of the markets. We sold off, as you know, on Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday had a huge advance, 383 points for the Dow after the Fed said probably raise rates three times. Looked like the market was taken in a stride. Thursday, really strange day, you know, when you saw the broader markets down less than a percent and the NASDAQ lost 2.5%. Boy, you don't normally see that. And then today, everything dropped like a rock. You know, I thought on Wednesday, all right, you know, they've been expecting higher rates for a while. Fed makes the announcement. So what else is new, right? And it appears just after a short period of time, everybody thinking about this, that, you know, maybe we'll just sell and try to sort out things later.
You know, save for the NASDAQ, which was largely flat today, the vast majority of the selling for the S&P and the Dow this week really came today. And I think it was as much about kind of expectations as it was just a very technical issue that happens every once in a while. We had quadruple witching today, and we don't get to talk about it all that often. But you've got the expiration of both stock and indices, futures and options all at the same time. And it causes a lot of people to sell to cover positions. And so I think as much as we want to point to any one thing, I think that's one thing that sometimes has a pretty outsized impact, just as a lot of big money players are trying to cover some positions, trying to figure out you know, where they need to be as those options and futures expire. And so, you know, I think if you look at the first 4 days of the week, you're largely, again, with the exception of the NASDAQ, you're largely flat. And then you get today where you've got all those options and futures expiring. And I think that tells a bit of the story. I think the more interesting thing to me is just how different of a story stocks and the 10-year Treasury are telling, right? That we keep talking about inflation, we keep talking about, you know, how horrible things are going to be, and yet the 10-year Treasury has not really indicated, nor have any of the typical inflationary measures on the rate side really indicated that the expectation for inflation is going to change all that much from where we are. And so, you know, I think a lot of just little nuance this week, but not a lot of really fundamental shifts in what we expect for stocks.
You know, I don't know that the expiration of options and futures contracts more fully explains the divergence that we've seen here between the tech stocks and the broader markets, you know, particularly the activity that we saw yesterday. You know, we've been talking, Kyle, as you know, for months about how higher interest rates affect the companies that have huge cash flow. And, you know, that's really kind of playing out now that we expected it. We started to see it. A lot of the tech stocks underperformed the broader markets, particularly the NASDAQ, since late summer. And, you know, once the Fed said, okay, here's what we're going to do, three rate increases, and they're going to end tapering a little earlier. You know, as they said, the Street had been expecting they'd end tapering, as you know, by June. Now it's going to be probably by the end of March. Just that change in the forecast for rates seemed to take its toll on the tech stocks that had been leading the market for so long. And, you know, as you know, if you suspect that market leadership is shifting, it creates all sorts of opportunities for investors, particularly, I think, in the core of the market, and perhaps even there's still life yet in the value sector.
Yeah, and just to put a finer point on that, Bob, when you look at the Fed's changes to the dot plot, right, the expectation for where rates will be next year, 2023 and 2024, the expectations now for three rate increases potentially next year, three in 2023 and two in 2024. And I think when we're talking about these high cash flow, high growth businesses, we're not just looking at the next year or two of cash coming in. We're looking well into the future and discounting that back, right, to get an idea of what should this be worth today. And the more you expect rates to rise, not just next year, but as we go along, I think the more you've got to discount that cash back. And so I think you're right to point out that, you know, it's part of the story, or a pretty significant part of the story, for growth stocks, for tech stocks in particular. And I think as we talk about kind of the way we manage money, this is the opportunity that active management has been looking for. It's the opportunity to get away from just a couple of large capitalization stocks that have led the way and get to an environment in which I think some more value-oriented or some more intrinsically value-oriented businesses can capture some leadership, can carry some portfolios.
Kendall, as you may know, some analysts were blaming the crises in Turkey for the drop in U.S. stocks today. You know, just in a little over a week, the Turkish currency has declined over 20% against the U.S. dollar. That's a lot. And, you know, they've now lost half of their value. And, of course, people are worried about contagion, the problems in Turkey spreading to other emerging markets. I know you're a fan of international investing, so am I, but it's been a tough year to make money overseas.
Yeah, and I think it just goes to show that, and you can even circle in the conversation about tech stocks too, why it's so important to have that right mix of U.S. versus overseas, and even furthermore, the right mix of growth to value. So it's all about having that proper balance. You know, many people may have favored growth a little more, maybe favored overseas a little more over the last 10 years. But I think, you know, we may start to see people looking at that a little bit differently and maybe, you know, dialing back a little bit of their overseas exposure and maybe bringing value a little bit closer to growth as far as the overall allocation to the stock side of their portfolio.
You know, for decades and decades, value just outperformed growth. If you look at 30-year periods of time, value made more than growth. So it was only 5 years ago, give or take, that 30-year lookbacks, that growth finally started making more than value. A very historic shift. So when you look at the leadership stumble, you wonder, are we going to go back to the old days when companies that produce things and manufacture, more on the boring side, capture everybody's attention. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the show. Housing starts up 11%, pretty good bellwether for this coming year for construction.
That's true, Bob. One number that jumped out at me with the housing reports was that the number of houses under construction right now are the highest they've been since 1973. So that's, you know, that's not showing up so much in the headline numbers for the permits and for the housing starts, but the ones that are being built, you know, we're back up there at an annual rate that we haven't been for decades now. So that's looking really good for that industry. And it's an example of other indicators that we've had and that we've been seeing for weeks that show that the economy is doing pretty well on a lot of different signals. You know, we saw that we had the industrial production numbers, and those were the best that we've had since the industrial production is the highest it's been since September of 2019. So that's, you know, months before the pandemic started. What else did we have? We had numbers on the unemployment insurance claims, and you know we usually look at the 4-week moving average, which kind of evens out the volatility week to week. That 4-week moving average is now the lowest it's been since November of 1969. So that's quite an achievement.
Art, we're just the tail end of a pretty good year for the financial markets. This is the time of year everybody asks your opinion, what you see for next year. I know you're not a big fan of making forecasts, but you know, it seems to me with 9% earnings growth and interest rates staying low, and still a fair amount of pent-up demand out in the marketplace, that could surprise everybody and have a yet another decent year.
Yeah, Bob, I couldn't agree with you more. When you look at corporate profits this year going up, what, 40% is the anticipation for the full year, 45% for the full year numbers, and stocks being up, looking at the S&P up 25% even after a little bit of a sell-off this week. I'm as usual, cautiously optimistic about next year. Your comments earlier about concerns about emerging markets, I think it should be taken to heart. But the fact of the matter is, a bull market climbs a wall of worry. And the worries were pretty evident this week, you know, for example. I think the markets have it wrong when they're selling. I feel pretty strongly that they've got it right when investors are buying. The question is, you know, does the Fed, you know, what is the Fed doing that is right? What are they doing that's wrong? So on Wednesday, everybody liked what the Fed had to say because they thought they were kind of preemptively getting themselves into a position where they can raise rates. And on Thursday, and I guess today as well, they're second-guessing the Fed and, you know, concerned that perhaps it's too little too late and inflation's going to take off. And so I'm hoping that there'll be more support for the Fed's policies next year. And I'm expecting the markets to move higher because I think they're doing the right thing at just the right times. Inflation worries, I think, have been overblown this year, and I think we'll see that next year. I think we will see the transitory language is out, but I do think we won't see as, you know, prices going up as much next year, and I think that'll provide further support to the markets. And when earnings season starts in January, I'm expecting the stocks to move higher. It's just going to happen, and I think this type of nervousness being expressed, you know, by the markets this week is just a sign of, you know, trading, as Kyle, you know, suggested earlier.
Art, I think I'm most interested in your comments about the Fed, and I think so many people maybe have this backwards, in that the Fed's response is delayed in some way, or that the Fed is chasing what ultimately should happen. I think in reality, what's happened is that a strong economy and a greatly improved labor market has provided the Fed cover. Right, they've been looking for a way to normalize interest rates, to normalize the purchasing that was going on, now accelerating tapering so that they could conclude by March at this point. I think if anything, we should be encouraged by the fact that economic growth and a considerably stronger labor market than where we thought we would be at this time is giving the Fed the opportunity to get back to more normal overnight lending rates, giving the Fed opportunity to maybe rearm themselves should we see future volatility in the markets that requires Fed intervention again. It's very difficult when you're already at the zero lower bound, when that overnight rate is already at zero, to respond. One of the ways you can do that is through quantitative purchases, as we did with treasuries and mortgages and any number of other securities potentially that the Fed could have bought. Far easier when you have more quivers, right? Far easier when you have more arrows in your quiver to respond. And so I think, if anything, what we're seeing is a Fed that's been given the opportunity to recover a little bit back towards a more normal stance.
Kyle, I think it's a difference between, I often hear the analogy of what the Fed does as to having a punch bowl. And I think it's a better analogy to say it's more like an IV. And so they're taking an IV away rather than taking a punch bowl away, and that's a good sign.
You know, back in the 90s, they started a term called the Greenspan put, which in simple terms that people could take all sorts of risks knowing that Greenspan would bail them out at some point in time. That worked good till it didn't. And the Y2K and the financial crisis convinced people that the Fed can only do so much. And I think this is one of those times where, flat out, no one knew how the economy was going to perform coming out of COVID. We now know in hindsight that people are spending money like they're not going to live till next year. And who knows how long that spirit is going to be in the collective mindset. Clearly something is happening. Retail is 18% higher than pre-pandemic levels. Granted, we're all spending less in restaurants and hotels, but spending on stuff is still high. And I think that's one of the issues that will support the economy moving forward. Right, I got told by a number of doctor clients this week that COVID's not going away. You're going to get used to it. We're going to live with it. Well, perhaps the mindset of I'm not going to live forever, I might as well enjoy my money while I'm alive, is going to continue for a while because COVID's going to be with us for a while. You know, the behavioral psychologists have written extensively about animal spirits and the sense of, you know, why are you spending money? You know, Joel, you report on confidence, right? Two questions, how do you feel now? How do you think you're going to feel in 6 months? And, you know, the results are all over the map usually. But you take a look at literally what people are doing with their money, and I think, you know, that's what's going to surprise a lot of people, that I think that's going to keep up for a while. And we're potentially no longer going to be stuck in 2% each year GDP growth. I have no doubt that the numbers will come down. But I think that's going to be one of the surprises for this coming year.
Bob, I heard some numbers this week that said that since February of 2020, that personal spending per month is down 1% on services, but it's up 17% on goods.
I think everybody got stuck in their houses and they're looking at that ratty couch in the sunroom that they can't take anymore, and everybody wants to upgrade. And I think it's significant. And in the beginning, you know, look how wrong everybody was, right? GM was wrong. They should have kept building cars for as long as they could have. The housing industry was absolutely wrong. The nation's sawmills were absolutely wrong. No one predicted a building boom, historic building boom, let alone the shift in how we spend our money. And I think it gives you the opportunity to be pretty optimistic, you know, for the next couple of years, assuming none of the bad things happen that are on our list as well. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.